Welcome to QualityCast North, a podcast dedicated to showcasing healthcare quality improvement across Northern British Columbia. Our podcast is sponsored by the Physician Quality Improvement Initiative, or PQI. PQI is a flagship program that the Specialist Services Committee, which is a collaboration between the Provincial Ministry of Health and the Doctors of BC, with representation from local health authorities. We are casting to you today from the traditional territory of the Kleidlay-Tenay First Nation. And hosting today's episode are Dr. Sheer Chewy and myself, Deanna Danskin.
On today's episode, we're talking about physician wellness and burnout. The traditional image from decades past of the stereotypical rural primary care doctor or specialist was one of a dedicated, usually male, jack of all trades, married to the job, working all day, and every night on call. Now, thankfully, the practice of medicine has evolved since those times, but the legacy of this archetype continues to persist with many rural physicians today, often more by necessity than design. Today, the practice of modern medicine has changed and is now far more intense, complex, and demanding of physicians' time than ever before. It may not come as a surprise, therefore, to find that physicians are now burning out at an ever-increasing rate. The issue is one that often remains hidden or unrecognized, but has implications for the resilience and sustainability of our healthcare system. To talk about physician burnout and some of the work she has done to help support physician wellness is our guest today, Dr. Ingrid Cosio. Hello, Ingrid. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Now, before we get into our main subject today, I wonder if we could start with maybe a little background about yourself. And so can I ask you, first of all, what was it like growing up in your household as a child? And how did that influence your decision to pursue a career in medicine?
Yes, well, I grew up in Montreal and I had two physician parents. And so right from very young, I was very fascinated with, dinner table conversations. But then, as I got older, it was interesting because although I had been thinking about doing medicine through my younger years and some of high school, in Montreal, you have Cégep after high school. And so I did some science stuff, but I started looking at other types of courses and like international politics and things and started thinking about, looking at my parents' life from a different lens in terms of the busyness and what I perceived as a lot of stress. And so I totally took a different path and did an undergrad and a Bachelor of Arts and kind of thought I'd put medicine aside, but then looped back around, came back to it at the end and went into medicine after that BA. So kind of interesting, like it drew me in, but also pushed me away. And then I did end up coming back to it despite that.
That's a great, interesting story. And it's interesting that you decided to get on an arts route initially and then change your mind and come back. Because of course they do say that there's a lot of art in medicine as well. So that's interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about your practice now and maybe something about the team of people you work with?
So really my practice, like I've divided in two. So 3 days a week, I'm in a teaching family practice. So we have family practice residents who do chunks of their residency program in our practice. There's a team of 4 of us family docs and 2 fabulous MOAs. And then we're also connected with an interprofessional team that is not, unfortunately, co-located with us yet, hopefully in the near future, but they are part of our team as well. So that's 3/5 of my week. And then 2/5 is at the Northern Gender Clinic, where I have another fabulous team with a nurse practitioner and a psychiatry nurse, and again, fabulous MOA team and a team lead. So then it's different work, much more kind of, specialty consultative and lots of capacity building. So I do lots of really fun work connecting with other providers across the North and actually provincially too, because I do the race line. So that's really a fun piece of that, where I get to do that colleague to colleague kind of conversations and support.
Sounds very comprehensive. Lots of different teams. That's yeah. Very cool. Mm-hmm. So why do you think on one hand, physicians are so dedicated to their patients, and yet sometimes maybe neglect their own health and wellness needs?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think like Sheer alluded to in the intro, I think it's like a programming thing, really. I mean, this is like a culture that has developed over a long, long time. And, you know, even from our training, sort of this culture of you go, 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 you know, it doesn't, you know, it's almost like you're the strongest one if you come out at the end of the day and you haven't peed, you haven't eaten, you haven't had anything to drink, and, you know, you've had no sleep. And it just sort of kind of ingrained right from the get-go. I think there has been some improvements over the years, but certainly, like, I did my med school, I started in 99, that's totally, and residency training even as well, like, that's totally what it was like. And so there's almost some pride that goes with that. And so then when you start thinking, you know, oh, I can't complain that I haven't slept in 3 days, because, you know, that's what a doctor does. And it's just putting the work and all that stuff first. So, I mean, I think that that is like that programming that then kind of sets a bit of a foundation. And then there's this, the expectations and this sort of, I think a lot of the times, physicians, well, lots of humans, but physicians hold themselves to, you know, a higher standard. And, you know, we may spend the irony of like spending a day where you're talking to people about burnout and their mental health struggles and normalizing it and reassuring and talking about a plan and do, you know, but then not, when it comes to yourself, like not applying any of that. And I think that's, you know, pretty typical. I just think it's something that has been a well-worn path. That is the path of least resistance, it seems like, that people just fall into. And it's a lot more work, I'm finding, as I'm trying to create a new path and get enough people to walk it, that it's the path of least resistance, right? But it's a process for sure.
Yeah, so it's kind of that normalized culture of how it's always been. Mm-hmm. So it kind of sounds like that this has been a longstanding part of physicians' lives. Yet we're hearing so much more about physician burnout lately. So would you say this has sort of previously been swept under the rug, or are there other things at play that are making it more more topical currently?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think talking about these issues just in general, you know, has become easier and easier over years and even decades. But, you know, so I think it was probably totally swept under the rug initially, for a long, long time. And then, you know, starting to like just pile up enough that you can't hide it anymore. But I mean, I think physician suicide has been something obviously that's hard to ignore and has been more and more in the media. So I think that's a big part. I think the pandemic like was just a whole other, load on physicians and on the system that certainly brought stuff that was maybe just kind of being managed to the surface, to the point where it just can't be ignored. Kind of a bit of a sense of crumbling of our system where people are. Either, well, being asked sometimes or expect themselves or others expect them to do more with less. And so it's just mounting pressure with this sort of sense, I think for most people, at the bottom line is like patient care, to try and maintain patient care and do what we need to do. I mean, it's the day-to-day stuff, but I'd say like, particularly in my role as a family physician and at the gender clinic for that matter, but the advocacy piece is huge. And although super fulfilling, is exhausting. So constantly trying to get that CT scan or get that OR or try and navigate the system for patients, and seeing how often it's impossible to really get that whatever it is in a timely way. I think it's just emotionally exhausting as well.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail right on the head there. It is exhausting. Modern medicine, the practice of modern medicine, does seem to be more exhausting than ever right now. Mm-hmm. Can I just ask you, from a personal point of view, how did you come to realize that physician health and well-being was such a large issue?
You know, I mean, I think just seeing with peers, even in training and then early in practice, you know, the amount of people that struggle. Having had one of my med school classmates, siblings committed suicide in training. So we were done by that time, but just, you know, so, and then just hearing about more and more cases like that and in residency, because I was up until a couple of years ago, I was, the site lead for behavioral medicine for the residency program. So quite involved with the residents. And I actually was part of that role is a resident wellness kind of committee. And so I was quite involved with resident wellness. And so these sort of hearing news about residents in some of our BC programs, but also across the country ending their lives. And it's a, you know, it was a real eye-opener of how real this can all be. And with my interest mostly in the resident kind of realm, in 2018, there was an international conference on physician wellness or called something like that. And it was in Toronto. And just hearing more and more people talk about it, like it again was an eye-opener. And actually one of the most inspiring talks that I went to there was a small workshop with a group from Calgary who had a physician peer support program. And based on the exact model of what ours is, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, but Dr. Jane Lemaire was the one presenting with her team, and I was really inspired. And I mean, that was in 2018. I came back and talked to a committee I was on here about it, and just, you know, I've been kind of thinking about it for quite some time, and just, it's not an easy thing to kind of develop ourselves. And I'd even spoken to Dr. Lemaire and asked if they could have some resources. They just were so strapped. They just couldn't, you know, put the resources out to train, particularly out of province. So yeah, I mean, I just became more and more interested. And then I would say Dr. Darby Cassidy did a talk on burnout. And so that's how I kind of linked up with him. And then we got a group together to create a peer support. I forget what we called it, like peer support, physician peer support group. And we had several physicians from our hospital, our facility, and our community very interested to join that group. Interestingly, three surgeons, and another family physician and myself. And it was through that then I got into sort of this whole pilot program that we started. But so certainly it's, you know, starting to see, and then seeing people that you wouldn't necessarily expect that are super interested in getting involved with physician peer support and wanting to figure out how we can provide this service for our community. So yeah, it was kind of one thing led to another.
That's great.
Yeah. So you mentioned, Ingrid, the initiative. So if you could tell us a bit more about this physician wellness initiative that you've been involved with, involved with setting it up and getting it ongoing. So can you tell us a bit about it and what you're sort of aiming to achieve and how you're doing with that so far?
Yeah. So I think what happened is with this interest in this specific program, after chatting with Dr. Lemaire, I reached out to Doctors of BC, like PHP, Physician Health Program, and Felicia Fan is one of the members of the team there. And so I spoke to her and kind of expressed my interest in perhaps having some support around creating a program like this. And they were looking at supporting a pilot where they would help support different sites in BC to implement a physician peer support program based on the same model that Dr. Lemaire had been, their program had been based on, which is it's Dr. Jo Shapiro, who was an ear, nose, throat surgeon at Harvard. And she started, she has a great website actually with lots of resources. And she started this years ago and has done a lot of training at different sites across North America and Europe, I think as well, based on sort of this idea of physician peer support, how they do the process from everything from like starting a nomination process to have physicians in a community really be the ones to choose the folks that they would want to speak with, to developing like a process in terms of how to have physicians get in touch with peer supporters and then in between that, doing a formal training for these peer supporters and then, you know, evaluation and all of this kind of stuff. And so the Physician Health Program basically had the idea that they were going to try and do this pilot. They, at the time I spoke initially to Felicia, they thought they were going to try and get Dr. Jo Shapiro to kind of head this up and help support it. They weren't sure at that point, but she said she'd keep me in the loop. And then sure enough, that's what they got Dr. Shapiro, and they sent out an application, a call for applications to be a pilot site. So I jumped on that and got an application in, and we were one of the five sites that they started in 2022.
So I'm wondering, what has the response been from physicians locally?
Yeah, so we, in terms of like, we call, we use the term reach-ins for the ones where folks are going to our online referral form or connection form, we call it. Or either themselves or a colleague perhaps has said, hey, do you want me to send something to the peer support program for somebody to reach out to you? Because that's sometimes how we all kind of find it easier, maybe, if somebody else does that for us. So those are reach-ins where somebody, whether it's through a colleague or themselves, are reaching into the program saying, please, I'd like to be matched with a peer supporter, you know, to have a conversation. And then, and for that, we've probably had around, I don't know, I want to say 8 to 10 or something like that in the last year, pretty small numbers. Like, I think, I mean, it depends what you're comparing to, I suppose, but pretty typical for early programs. Apparently there's way less reach in than there is reach out, and reach out is more where the peer supporters themselves, like we chat as a group. And if something, like we've had a few really tragic events in the last year where we know several physicians have been involved, you know, especially if there's been like the death of a young person, something like that, where we've kind of designated each peer supporter to reach out to one of the people involved and just check in. And so those reach outs, there's been many, many more of those. And every time that we've done any promotion of the program, whether it's at a department meeting or, you know, an MSA event or whatever, I try to always emphasize the fact that in trying to change our culture and normalize the fact that, you know, we do tough stuff and we see tough things and it's okay to be vulnerable and to, you know, need some support, that we're going to do a lot of reach out. And this is just checking in. It's not judging. It's, you know, so it's trying to send that message of we're looking out for each other, right? That's what a community of physicians should be doing, and or any community for that matter. And so that piece of it, I think, has been more pronounced than the reach-ins so far. But the idea being, and this is what Dr. Shapiro says, like in the programs that she has organized and seen and done herself, is that sometimes it takes years for those reach-ins to start coming in more, right? And we kind of increase our awareness, I suppose, by reaching out to folks as well, right? So that's kind of how the program has been used, or, you know, where the resources have gone.
Yeah. So, you know, just reflecting on that there's less reach-ins than reach-outs.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned, you know, awareness of the program might increase those reach-ins, but do you think there's any other reasons why physicians might feel reluctant to sort of do that reach-in or mm-hmm. seek out that personal help when they're struggling with those types of situations?
Yeah. Yeah. And we, in fact, just did a survey a few weeks ago asking our community docs exactly that. And of the ones that answered, the themes that answered and had identified a barrier, the themes were pride, embarrassed, know my colleagues too well. And so, you know, hence the shame around like they're too close to home type thing. So those were some of the themes that we saw in the survey. Now we also had folks answer it that they would reach out if they, you know, if they felt they needed and they felt it was safe and that sort of thing. So that was good. But I mean, certainly seeing those themes, and I mean, I think that we would have predicted that, that's that programming, right? And that's also individual personality and, you know, how folks feel in terms of being vulnerable. And so one of the things that is new with the program is we now have an inter-site matching. So that means if somebody reaches into the local program on the connection form that they're filling out, at the bottom it actually says, if you prefer to connect with another site, that may be a site like another site in the north or a smaller place, you know, not necessarily provincial Vancouver, you know, although that's always an option as well, that there's this sort of middle option where you can be connected with a peer supporter, kind of like at a site like ours, but somewhere else who there's more anonymity and that sort of thing. So that's kind of nice. We have that added option. I think the other barrier, you know, other than the sort of this embarrassment, stigma, shame kind of piece is time. Like I think as people get more stressed and burnt out, there's this sense of a time, like time scarcity. And so you know, we lose that perspective of, okay, if I were to take 15 minutes to reach out and connect with somebody, I would probably gain hours of productivity and time feeling better, having, you know, talked about stuff. But I think in the moment, and whether it's for looking, you know, reaching out for support or, you know, sitting down and playing a game with your kid, like somehow in that moment when everything feels so heavy and piled on, it's just this sense of like, I don't have time. I don't have time for anything, even a 5 minute, you know, card game or whatever. So I think we all fall into that trap when we're stressed and overwhelmed and burnt out. And so that time investment, whether it's to speak to a peer or do something with your family or get out for a walk, you know, can feel like it's just impossible. So I think that's a barrier. And I think something that is a tough thing, but, you know, hopefully talking to somebody, kind of looking at, okay, realistically, what would 15 minutes at lunch going around the block do to your day? Or, you know, like kind of shifting the mindset around that, or the frame, how you frame it.
Now, I wonder if I could just bring everything to sort of the present, really. And I just ask you, maybe if there's a physician who's listening to this podcast or who's been prompted to listen to the podcast, who might be feeling maybe close to burning out today, what can they do? What can they do today or tomorrow to access some of this support?
Mm-hmm. So they can reach out to our program locally, the Physician Peer Support Program, the Prince George Physician Peer Support Program. The ways to do that is if they're in the medical lounge, we have posters up where there's a QR code. They could take a quick snapshot of that. They can go to the new PGMSA website, and there's links there to the connection forms. There's both connection forms for folks to connect themselves directly, or if a colleague, you know, you've spoken to somebody and they've said, yes, please do reach out and have them call me or text me or email me, then the colleague form is there as well. So those are probably the easiest ways. I've had some people just email me or text me and say, I really need to connect with a peer supporter. Can you figure it out for me? Because they can't find the form. And that's totally fine too. And so, yeah, and then we just match them with a peer supporter here. There's a place in the form for them to put, you know, if they have any preferences, they'd prefer, you know, somebody at early career, late career, you know, with family, if it's something that they want somebody who's has kids and they're trying to balance all that stuff, they'd like to speak to somebody with the same experience, or female or male or whatever. So we try and match people as best as possible. So those are some ways to connect locally. And then there's always the PHP, the Physician Health Program provincially, that has resources as well. And like I said, the inter-site option, that's usually through the referral form that I mentioned at the beginning, like for our program, and we can connect them inter-site. But those are some options that are, you know, quick access. And I would remind folks that hopefully all of our physician colleagues have a primary care provider, but that is always a good place to reach out to.
I'll just add, we can add all those links. So if you're listening and you want to see what those links are, we can add them into the show notes for access on that.
That's a great idea, Deanna. Thank you. And so this is a wonderful program that you're setting up. It really is. And it sounds great. There's clearly a need for it at the moment in physicians' lives and at work. And I'm very conscious also that you put a lot of work into this yourself, a lot of time and effort. And I'm just wondering, do you have any, because you're obviously not immune to mm-hmm. these issues, do you have any personal approaches to avoiding burnout? Any tips that you have, or what do you like to do to relax? Is there maybe a special place you like to go, activities you like to do?
Yeah. So I, you know, the whole finding balance in your life, like I think it's a constantly work in progress. And I'm a mother of two teenagers now and have a husband and two dogs. And so my approach that has been the same for many, many years, I'm thankful that I have a running group that will join me at the crazy hour of 5:30 in the morning to run 3 mornings a week in the trails. And then I get the dogs out, you know, multitasking. And another group that I do Pilates with on the other days. So I have like my morning exercise routine that sets me up for the day. And that's always been super important for me. And then journaling, I'm a big journaler and I'm a big fan of, of Stoicism. Like there's a great book called The Daily Stoic, and Ryan Holiday is a somebody who he wrote, he's one of the writers of this book. And it just has a daily thing with like a quote from one of the Stoics like Marcus Aurelius or Seneca, and just it's all kind of based in that serenity prayer that's not necessarily a religious prayer, but just like, well, I guess originally it was, but it's looking at sort of grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And that's basically, I think, the crux of the Stoic kind of philosophy. And so I find that in terms of frame of mind, it helps, especially with a lot of things that we can't control that are very difficult to manage. So that's another little pearl. And then blocking time. I think that that is something that, so in my schedule, I actually have blocks of time, like for my exercise, but also for, you know, going to my kids' basketball games or, you know, and so setting some boundaries where, no, this is my dinner making time. I can't have a meeting at this time. You know, I think it, it helps to kind of, just remember to put the importance, like not only our work stuff goes in our calendar, like I think you have to block out the other important stuff too. So those are some of my tricks. And in terms of a favorite place, like we built a cabin out at Summit Lake, actually before we bought a home, we did the recreation first, you know, priorities, and it's absolutely beautiful. And so that is probably one of my favorite places to go and have some nice family time.
That sounds idyllic. That's some good tips there. And I take your point about the Ryan Holiday book. I think I've got that book, actually. I think I've had it a couple of years there, although unfortunately I've got behind and I think I'm only in March still, but we're inching our way through.
I've stopped sticking with the date. I just pick whatever I feel like. They're all good, so it doesn't matter.
They are all good. Excellent. Well, thank you, Ingrid, for all of this. It's been great to hear about this wonderful program you're setting up and the success you've had so far. But sadly, unfortunately, our interview is coming to an end now. And so I can hear the closing music coming. And I'd just like to thank you again for joining us today. And as a token of our thanks, as always, one of our exclusive and highly coveted QualityCast North coffee mugs will be on its way to you shortly. Now, if you, the listener, would like to know more about today's topic and our guest, you can find more details with our show notes, including the links to some of those helpful resources on our website. That's www.nhpqi.ca/podcast, where you can also find links to prior episodes. And if you enjoyed listening to today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thank you again for joining us today. I'm Cher Chewy.
I'm Deanna Danskin.
And you've been listening to QualityCast North. You've been listening to QualityCast North. Today's episode was hosted and co-produced by Dr. Cher Chewy and Deanna Danskin, with technical support from Matt Walker. Original music by Daniel Chewy and artistic support by Reggie Goodine. Further information on the content of today's episode is available with the show notes on our website, nhpqi.ca. QualityCast North is recorded on the traditional territory of the Clayclaytonay First Nation. If you enjoyed today's interview, check out our other episodes available on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you find your podcasts.